I'm Marlena, and I want to welcome you to Marlena, right here on ACB Radio Mainstream, where for about the next 60 minutes or so, we'll be taking your calls at 1-866-666-7926. Come on in, sit down, take your shoes off, give me a call, won't you? You've been listening to Marlena on ACB Radio.
Hello and welcome to Marlena. We're doing things a little bit by remote this week, and so you see, we almost finished before we even got started, but that's the magic of Marlena. You never know what's going to happen. Want to say a special thanks to Gary the Board Guy, who's on air with us. Good evening, Gary the Board Guy.
Good evening, everyone.
There he is. I'm in Boston this week doing some work up here in Boston, and Gary the Board Guy is in Seattle, and he's going to be pushing the buttons and letting me know when your calls come in. And let me give out the telephone number before we get too far into it. The telephone number is 1-866-666-7926. And if you're listening to this program at any time other than 1 to 2 Universal, which is Sunday night, 9 to 10 Eastern and 6 to 7 Pacific, or Monday morning, 1 to 2 Universal, you're listening to a rebroadcast. And if you dial the toll-free number, you'll get the fax machine. This week, in our continuing series on programs involving the upcoming ACB convention in Birmingham, Alabama, July 3rd through 10th, I thought I'd spin off a bit on the fact that I had to take a business trip and take a huge long flight from Seattle to Boston, although it certainly isn't as long a flight as Dave Williams will be taking from London to Birmingham, but nonetheless, it was quite a flight, and probably spend the next bit of time together chatting about travel. Hearing your stories, hearing any tips and techniques that you might have to share, or your questions. Perhaps you've not done a great deal of traveling on your own, and you're interested in kind of how do you do this and how do you manage that. Or perhaps you'd like to come to the convention, but you're a little bit concerned about the travel aspect. And I just want to say from the outset that if any of the latter few perhapses describe you, that you should not, and I hope you will not, feel ashamed or embarrassed to pick up the phone and call, because I don't know of anyone among us who instantly walked out the door one day and said, oh, I'm going to take a big plane ride, and I'm not even nervous because I can do anything. I think even people who see when they deal with something as large, sometimes as these huge airports, feel somewhat reticent. So if that's where you are and you want to talk about and get some tips and suggestions, feel free to do that. And conversely, if you're someone who, as I have, has traveled a fair amount, and you've got some ideas to share, would love to hear those as well. As I said in my announcement this week, I don't want this to be a Marlena monologue for an hour, and so I'm hoping that folks will call in with questions and travel suggestions. And again, the phone number is 1-866-666-7926 in the U.S. and Canada. And we're also in the chat room. For our international listeners over at www.ourplace.acbradio.org. And the chat room is the speakeasy room. Let me sort of get started, and Gary the Board Guy will let me know when we have calls, and I'm going to also ask Gary the Board Guy to feel free to chime in, because Gary travels as a person with a disability. His disability is not blindness, but he's a wheelchair user, and I know he has some interesting and different perspectives for travel.
We have a caller.
And we have a caller. Okay, let's bring the caller into the room. Hello, caller. With whom am I speaking, and from where are you calling?
This is Angel, and I'm
hello.
Calling.
Hello.
Yes?
Yes, hello, Angel.
Oh, okay. I didn't know whether you heard me. And I'm calling.
Yeah.
I'm calling from Cleveland, and I just wondered. I don't have a guide dog now, but I used to have a guide dog, and I was wondering, I never traveled with my guide dog, but I was wondering, when you go to a hotel or something, how do you determine where the dog is to be relieved and all this stuff? I mean, that seemed to be, you know, a formidable problem with me. That's why I never traveled with my guide dog.
Oh, that's a very good question. Now, anyone who's coming to convention, of course, what they will do is ask where the guide dog relief area is, because obviously,
right.
You know, with that number of dogs.
But what if you're traveling somewhere else by yourself?
Exactly. And I travel a great deal with my guide dog. And so let me tell you what I do, and maybe we'll get some comments from other folks with dogs as well. When I checked in this hotel this morning, I'm actually sitting in my hotel room right now, and when I checked into the hotel this morning, we had been traveling probably, about 13 hours. And so I knew that she needed out immediately. So after I checked in, I said, now before I take my bags upstairs, I need to take my dog out. And they said, okay. And I said, I prefer to just curb her because she will happily use pavement and not rely on grass. And so I said, what I would like to know is if it would be a problem if I went out the front door and turned in one direction or the other and went down several feet away from the front door. And they said, oh, no, that's fine. So I pretty much told them what I wanted and asked them if it would work in that circumstance. And then I asked them if they had a trash bucket of some sort by the door, and they said that they did. So I was really tired, and normally I would say, is it to the left or the right, but I forgot. I was very tired when I got here. So after I got her out there, and of course then I needed to clean up, and I thought, oh man, I didn't ask where the trash bucket was. So most hotels now, the kinds of trash receptacles that they use, they have ashtray things on the top, and the hole that you dump the trash in is kind of on the side. So I started just using my nose and my echolocation to try to smell cigarettes and sense where this thing was by the front door. And they were right. It was right at the front door. So what I tend to do is just be very clear about what I'm looking for and then ask them if they have it. What I find never works for me is if you say, where can I take my dog? Because then they just shake their head and they're like, well, gee, I don't know. So that's kind of how I handle it.
Oh, because I was just curious about that. Thank you.
Well, you're welcome. And is this the first time you've listened to my show?
No, I listened once before, and I called once before, and I really enjoy your show.
Well, I'm so glad. I'm glad that you listened, and I'm glad you called, and I hope you'll do both again.
Okay, thank you very much.
Have a good night, Angel.
You too.
Okay, so, so that's a good question. I mean, people do it very differently. With their dogs, you know, some people, the dog will use grass. Mine just doesn't like grass, and I'm happy about that because there isn't much grass in Manhattan. And so I'm happy that he will pretty much use a curb. Another sort of thought that I wanted to share about travel, particularly airline travel, I get this question a lot. From people who know that I've done a lot of traveling, and they will say, well, can I take my flight and stylist? You know, what if they take my stylist away from me? I've never had that happen to me. I find that they're pretty good with Braille equipment now. I travel with a Braille note all the time, and I do have to take the Braille note out when I get to security. Now, as you come into the security area, there is usually a table on one side or the other of you, and most times you might be with someone who's sort of doing a meet and a stiff. That's what the airlines call the people they have showing you from the ticket counter to your gate, meet and assist people. But I, again, will tell people what I want. I don't ask them. I will say to them, I need two bins. And these bins look like, for people who haven't seen them, they look a bit like plastic dish pans. And they are stacked up at one end of this table that you will encounter before you go through the metal detector. And so I will ask for two bins. Immediately they want to offer to take the computer and they want to do all this stuff. And I just smile, try to keep it friendly, and I tell them, no, thank you. I need to keep in control of my stuff so that I know what happens to it. So they put the two bins down on the table, and I put the Braille note in its case in one bin. And then I take my computer, my laptop, out of its case, and I put that in the other bin. And then I send those through first, and then I send the computer case and whatever bag I'm carrying through. And you have the option to, if you are a guide dog user, you have the option to put your dog at sit and stay and walk through the metal detector and then call your dog, or to take your dog with you through the metal detector, either harnessed or not harnessed. I choose the latter because I don't like separating from my dog. But you do have the option. So if you don't want to separate from your dog, the law does not require you to do that. You can go through with your dog. Now, if you go through with your dog, it's going to set the metal detector off. And what that then means is once you get through that metal detector, you will stop immediately. And if you don't stop, they'll stop you. And there will be in front of you usually a U-shape of rope barricade. And you'll be entering this U-shape thing. And someone will then come along and release the part of the U that's going across you, and they will walk with you over to another area where there's a chair. And I'm being so explicit about this because it is so standard, at least in my experience, of any airport that I've ever been in since 9/11. So there'll be a chair, and you'll sit down on the chair and take your shoes off. So for ladies, I recommend that you wear slip-on, slip-off shoes. I tend to wear Birkenstocks anyway, and that makes it easier. But they're going to take your shoes away, and they're going to run them through the metal detector. And they're also going to scan the bottoms of your feet. And then someone else will come and pat down your dog. And once that is done, you'll stand up on a mat, and you put one foot in front of the other and one arm out in front and one arm out in back, and they run a scanner over you. And whenever it beeps, they just touch you to make sure that it's like a buckle or a snap or whatever that it's beeping for. Security have gotten hugely better in my experience in the last year than they were when this all started. So getting through security now is a lot easier. Once you are clear, it's then time to reclaim your stuff. And if you're very lucky, to meet an assist person that you may have with you, although if you know your airport, like I know SeaTac pretty well, that's my airport, so I don't always use a meet and assist person, but the meet and assist person will have begun to accumulate your stuff. And I make it very clear that I don't want anyone to put my things back in the bag for me. I want to do it myself. And they're pretty willing to let you do that. Your stuff is usually at another table that's very close to the chair. And you go over and you find your stuff, you put it all back together, and then you're on your way. Now, before we leave kind of the stuff and keeping track of stuff, one thing that I do that I have found works beautifully for me, on my computer case, I have a padded, very small case that fits my laptop, and I have a bell on the handle of that case. So that whenever that case is moved, if I'm not, you know, right with it, but I'm in its area, I hear that. I know when it's gone through the detector. I know exactly where it is. So I would recommend that you, you know, consider if you're worried about things getting away from you, to put some sort of a distinguishing bell, you know, certainly not a huge cowbell type thing, but something that you can basically keep an eye on through listening. Let me give the phone number. It's 1-866-666-7926. And again, if you're listening to this program anytime other than Monday 1 to 2 Universal or Sunday 9 to 10 Eastern, 6 to 7 Pacific, you're listening to a rerun. And would love to hear from folks with their own travel experiences and questions. So once you clear security, then depending on how you travel, if you have a meeting.
Marlena, I'm going to interrupt you again. We have a caller. Just a second.
All right.
I'll bring him in.
All right.
Okay, caller.
And hey, Marlena, Jim Denham.
Hey, Jim Denham. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Well, I'm fine. I'm in Boston.
Yes, enjoying life with the Bostonians.
I'm parking my car down in Harvard Yard.
I wanted to say I think this is an excellent topic for your show because there are so many different pieces of information out there that I should preface this by saying I've traveled quite a bit myself, and I think there are so many myths and rumors and things like that out there, and for people who haven't traveled, it is a very scary thing. I know the first couple times I traveled, it was a very scary experience, and you kind of get into the routine, but it's not an easy thing to learn, and there's always new things you learn. But one of the things you were mentioning about the meet and assist people and how they walk with you from the gate or the check-in to the gate or vice versa. And I think one of the things I really want to point out is that's a good thing to do is to make as much conversation as possible with those individuals. And if possible, find out their names. Because it does a couple things. First of all, if you have conversation with them, it makes them feel a little more comfortable with you as an individual. And second of all, if you find out their names, if you're going through the security and you're not sure where they're at, you can call out their name and know where they're at rather than just hoping that they find you and hoping that they say something to you and they might be grabbing your stuff and the security people might not know, you know, who you're with or things like that. So just if you can get their name, you're doing real well. Now, a lot of these people, I should say, don't speak English real well, so that can be a bit tricky. But you just kind of have to do your best and just make conversation with them. It's just it that way, if you're walking with them, it makes the walk a little smoother and just keeps life easier.
Yeah, and you are fortuitous in your call, Mr. Denham, because – That was exactly where I was going next, is that once, you know, you leave that security area, that's usually when you have your longest walk, and so you have to decide how you want to do it. Do you want to be guided, or do you want to follow? And I use a dog, and I prefer to follow with her. And so then it becomes critical. I think Jay Stitely calls it mobility babble. It becomes critical to say things like, so, how was your day today? And you know, gee, the weather's been, you know, great or lousy or whatever it's been. Just so that you're, particularly if you're following them, that you're in constant communication with them.
Yeah.
And you're right, it's a challenge when they don't speak English, which is the case in many instances.
Mm-hmm.
But you still have to do it, or else it's hard to sort of know where they are.
Even if you're walking with a cane, as I do, you still need to do it because it keeps them paying attention to you. I've had cases where I've been walking with people, and if I don't really talk to them a whole lot, they're talking to their friends that they're passing, and they're doing certain stuff, and boom, they probably know if they run me into a pole, or, you know, and it just, it keeps them paying attention and focused on the person that they're guiding. A lot of times these people are used to escorting small children, senior citizens in wheelchairs, things like that. They're not really always used to escorting people who are blind or visually impaired.
Yeah, and they don't really know what to do. And so, once again, we have to tell them, you know. And,
yes.
And it's how, you know, sometimes you get really tired and you just want to say, ah, just do it. But you really, we really kind of, if we want good service from these folks and we want it to be a pleasant experience, again, like checking into the hotel this morning, you just have to tell people, I need to take your right arm, or I want to take your left arm, or, you know, if it's a door, just, you know, move your arm back and I'll just follow you, because they don't know.
Yeah.
And you do travel a lot. Do you have any other suggestions for, you know, airplane or train or...
Just like you say, just be very vocal and tell people what you want and just pay attention to your surroundings and you'll be fine.
Yeah, and particularly in an airport, there's a lot of landmarks in an airport.
Yes.
You know, the sounds, the smells, there's food everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
One of the ways I find some of the gates in SeaTac Airport is I smell first for the Cinnabon. If they ever move that, I'll never get anywhere. Well, Mr. Denham, are you coming to Birmingham?
Yes, ma'am.
Well, we shall see you there then.
I look forward to it. Keep up the great show.
Oh, well, thank you so much, and I look forward to seeing you.
Same here. Take care.
Have a good night. The telephone number to call is 1-866-666-7926. And the topic tonight is a bit of an open forum on travel, if you will. I certainly don't proclaim to be the great travel guru, but I've probably traveled close to 300,000 miles and in the past 2.5 years. And so I think I've learned a couple of things anyway. Hopefully we'll focus in on things other than airports. But since we started out at an airport, let's continue on to, as we approach the boarding gate. If you've never flown before, and I'm assuming that many people have, but if you haven't, the boarding gate is quite a large open expanse that is populated with rows upon rows upon rows of chairs in which people with small children, baggage, and stuff are seated, and small children, baggage, and stuff are strewn about. So
let me interrupt you again. We have another caller, and let me bring the caller in.
Hello, caller. With whom am I speaking, and from where are you calling?
Hello, Marlena. It's Sue. You know, I have to call you every week just to keep you on your toes, right?
You know, I'm stretching. I'm in Boston. Do you see my toes?
Pardon me?
I said I'm stretching. I'm up in Boston. Do you see my toes?
Yes, yes. What's the weather like there?
It's actually beautiful. They I told people today it was like a summer Seattle day. It was 75 and the breeze was blowing.
Well, gorgeous here too. Well, you know, I think the other thing that people have to do is, and I think that we've probably gone the gamut, or at least I have, from, oh, I don't want to pre-board, oh, I want to be Miss Independent, et cetera, to trying to figure out where you draw the line between what you want to do and what also makes it good for the airport people. Because the airport people are not always as savvy as they should be. So it's kind of a, you know, difficult thing sometimes. And I think sometimes when we've been traveling and, you know, the days or nights get long, our patience levels, just like anybody's, get stretched. And what I find really frustrating is that frequently they want to put you in a cart or they want to put you in a wheelchair, and you don't want to do that because you've already been sitting for 4 hours. And how do you combat that without, you know, making too big of a scene?
Yeah, I tell them, and again, this is just what I do. It doesn't make it the right thing, but it works for me. I have an easy out about the wheelchair because of the dog. And so what I tell them is, it will really upset my dog if you make me get in this wheelchair. But if you absolutely insist that I ride something, then if you've got a cart, I'll do that. Even though I don't want to, I figure, you know, it's sometimes the giving in is easier than the fighting.
True.
And so that tends to work for me. I'm not sure. What do you do as a cane user?
Well, you know, my preference is that just because I hate to sit anyway, that I'd like to take their arm and walk. But I had a situation at O'Hare where the guy said, either you get in the wheelchair, and this is like 5:30 in the morning, and I was trying to transfer to another plane, or I won't take you. So I got in the wheelchair. But then I did write a letter to United, and they apologized, et cetera. So I guess you have to kind of do case by case. But,
yeah,
you know, for me, I love to stretch my legs and get out and walk. Or some, I don't know why they think we can't walk as blind people.
You know, it happened yesterday at CPAC. The guy behind the desk said, well, I'll get a wheelchair for you now. And so it really irritated me, but I said, I'm not going to start this trip out angrily. So I started laughing. And I said, you know, I said, and I quote, I said, it's the damnedest thing. I said, my legs work perfectly well. It's my eyes that don't work, and I'm not sure how that's going to be any better in a wheelchair. And he, like, stopped, and then all of a sudden he started laughing, and he said, you know what? It's a conditioned response. We don't know any better. And
true.
So then we just both laughed, and I walked.
And what I try to do is, you know, that same thing. Try to first make it kind of funny and, like,
yeah.
You know, there's nothing wrong with my legs. My butt hurts, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think it's sometimes that they just don't get it.
Yeah. It's what they're taught to do. They're taught
right.
That meet and assist is either, you know, a kid or a wheelchair.
And I'm not crazy about pre-boarding, but I'm not going to go down that, you know, trail anymore. Sometimes if they say, do you want to pre-board, I don't make a big deal of it. Sometimes I'm in the bar, so... But I think it's just, you're right. They've been taught a couple, three things, and they don't really know what to do.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think, you know, it's an interesting topic because everyone has a different perspective, and that's what I really wanted to bring out tonight was just, you know, particularly if people want to come to the convention or they want to go do something. But, I mean, travel's a big thing, even if you can see.
Right.
Where you're going.
Oh, and, travel's stressful no matter what.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. So you're going to Birmingham.
I am.
Yay.
So I'm taking the red eye, which is, actually, those are pretty good flights usually because The airport's not as packed, and they usually take you right out to the, you know, gate.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, and surprisingly, those flights are usually pretty full.
Yeah, I know. There are very few seats on any flights these days.
Right. So, anyway, I'll see you and Gary in Birmingham.
All right. We'll be there. Thanks for the call.
All right. Bye.
Bye-bye. That was Sue in Seattle, and the telephone number she called is 1-866-666-7926. Well, Gary, the board guy, let's take a look over in the chat room and see if there might be any questions from the chat room. So when I finish speaking, Gary will unkey, and anyone in the chat room at www.ourplace.acbradio.org in the speakeasy chat room who has a question or a comment, we'd love to hear it. So why don't you unkey, Mr. Board Guy? And he's unkeyed, and we'll listen here and see if anyone has anything to say. And it would appear that that is not the case.
We've talked about the security side of boarding a plane and getting through the security barriers there at an airport. But I think also one of the things, this is Dave Williams, by the way, in case you didn't recognize. Okay, we're back. One of the things I think that's really important is that traveling can be stressful, but I think people should try and enjoy it as much as possible as well. About 4 or 5 years ago, I flew from the UK to Vienna in Austria, which is it's an international flight, but it's about a 4-hour flight. And typically in the UK, for an international flight, they ask you to check in 2 hours before the departure. Now, that's actually increased now for flights to the US. When I fly out to Birmingham next week, it will be 3 hours before the departure that I'll have to check in. Now, when I went to check in for my flight to Vienna, and I went to the check-in desk, I got to, you know, I arrived at the airport, and I found the check-in desk, and I identified myself and produced my, you know, my tickets and passport and everything. They were very, very pleasant at the desk, very helpful and everything. But they were very keen that I basically wait at the check-in desk, that I take a seat and be seated at the check-in desk and stay there, you know, for the next 2 hours. And then I would go through security, you know, a few minutes before my flight, and then go and board the flight straight away. Well, there was a number of reasons why I felt uncomfortable with that, not least of which is the fact that if I'd been sat at a check-in desk for 2 hours, twiddling my thumbs, I would have been bored out of my tiny little mind, absolutely bored silly. And of course, the other thing is with international flights, I wanted to go and buy some stuff in the duty-free. And I wanted to go to a restaurant, and I wanted to go to the bar, and, you know, I had 2 hours to kill. So, you know, I very gently, but quite firmly at the same time, said to the check-in staff, well, no, I'd actually prefer to check in now, and if I could have some assistance getting to the, you know, to the duty-free area, and if somebody could point me to the, you know, to a restaurant, you know, and I'll get assistance in the restaurant, and then I will meet the airline staff outside the restaurant when it's time for me to, you know, to go to the gate. You know, once I'd sort of said my case, I said, because to be honest, I said, I don't want to sit at a check-in desk for the next 2 hours with nothing to do. I've got a fairly active mind, and I have a fairly low, you know, threshold when it comes to boredom. And once you tell people, like, you know, there seems to be a common theme tonight. Once you tell people what you want, obviously be polite, but be clear in what you want, you know, and describe, you know, why it is what you want. And I know this is a fairly minor side, I suppose, in terms of, you know, compared with some of the things you were talking about earlier, Marlene, i.e., you know, keeping an eye on your possessions and making sure that your dog's okay and that sort of thing. But also, you've got to look after yourself, and you've got to, I think it's important to try as much as possible to try and enjoy the experience. And, you know, there are so many opportunities at airports to spend cash. There really are. You know, they will take your money off you. If you want to go to a restaurant, if you want to go to a bar, if you want to go to the duty-free area, if you're making an international flight, then absolutely you can do that. And if you want to avail yourself of those amenities, then as a blind person, you have exactly the same rights as any sighted person has to, you know, to make the most of those facilities. So if that's something that you want to do, you know, don't let them have you sitting at a desk for 2 hours doing absolutely nothing. You just go out of your mind. I know I certainly would have.
Okay, Aldell? Yeah, that's. I'm just giving Gary the board guy some instructions here on getting back into the chat room like he needs it, right? See, even from Boston, I still boss you around, don't I? That's absolutely correct. In fact, when I went to the UK, when I left the UK was when I did most of my shopping because... And Dave, I actually noticed this in the UK more prevalently than the US, is that they have a little area at let's see, it wasn't Heathrow, it was the other airport. Anyway, it doesn't matter, I can't remember the name of it. They have a little area where they want you to sit, and they want everyone to sit and just wait there. And I just laughed, and I said, no, you don't understand. I'm a woman. I have to shop. So I just had them point me to the duty-free area, and I shopped until I dropped. And Dave's absolutely right, though. I mean, we've heard stories of, in fact, I think Jonathan Mosen once experienced something where someone wanted to put him in a room somewhere.
And we have another caller.
And we have a caller. So we will bring the
caller. Is in the room.
Hello, caller. With whom are we speaking, and from where are you calling?
Well, I'm not calling from your hometown of Boston, but...
But you should be.
But I should be, exactly. It's Terry Pacheco. How are you?
I'm wonderful. We thought about you at brunch today.
Did you?
We did.
I've thought about all of you up there as well this weekend.
So what's your travel tidbit?
Actually, a couple of quick things. I don't know if people have noticed, especially with Birmingham coming up, there have been an awful lot of airline sale fares this week that have been coming up on a daily basis.
Really?
I know, for instance, on Southwest, you can get a ticket each way, one way, to Birmingham from New Orleans for $33.
Oh my gosh.
There's a lot of good sales around. Unfortunately, there isn't one from BWI to Birmingham for $33.
Wow.
But there are for a lot. U.S. Airs just put out two or three different days this week. They've put out different sales. Southwest is putting them out. Anybody who might be last minute deciding to go or who may have bought a full fare refundable ticket really might want to take a quick check and see if they might can save themselves some money on getting to Birmingham this year.
Boy, that's
because
an
there
excellent.
Are some really good fares around I've seen in the past week.
That's an excellent idea. I think I'll check on my ticket. If I can save a little money, you know.
I know the feeling now.
Now,
I was checking on Frank
as far as I know, you're the first partially sighted person to call. So can you share any travel tips for low vision, partially sighted people?
Well, especially when it comes to Southwest, I do like to pre-board with them because it's such a state of total chaos when everybody gets on their flights, you know, where it's unreserved seating and everybody just kind of flies onto the plane.
Yeah.
I think there are some airports that are much easier to, the signage is much, much better in some airports than in others. In BWI, for instance, the signage is pretty good. At like Reagan National here, the signage is awful, even though it's a lot of it is newer than parts of BWI. Take a look around. There's also the other thing about airports is that they really do have a basic logic to them. And they really aren't, you know, if you stop and figure it out in one airport, you can almost find your way through. You can find your way through many, many other airports because there is a good logic to them.
Do you, as a person with low vision, ever find it necessary or helpful to let the flight attendant know that, you know, you don't have the same quantity of sight as most people do?
I've done that a couple of times. Generally, oftentimes they figure that out because Frank and I are traveling together and Frank is totally blind. And so usually they figure, you know, they're either the Bickersons or there's something different in this group because they've got two suitcases and cane and you know, the total chaos that I tend to swarm around in anyhow.
Yes, the Pachinko timetable is infamous.
Yes. The bus is leaving at 10, 9:59 is no problem.
The bus leaves at 10, the Pachinkos leave the house at 9:58. Yes. Yeah, well, you know,
But there are times. I'm sorry.
Yeah. No, I was just saying that I really appreciate your candor about that because I think that sometimes, you know, we hear people say, oh, travel, oh, God, it's so hard. And for people who don't have a lot of travel experience, I guess I just worry that that might give them some unnecessary additional fear. And so everyone else who's called in or spoken has been, you know, traveling pretty much as a totally blind person. So I really appreciate your candor about traveling as a person with low vision.
The one thing that I usually find is that if you ask, if you ask something specific, you can usually get a response to it. The one thing I usually do is check at, especially in an airport that has curbside check-in. I won't usually be checking a bag. I hate to check luggage. But I will usually just stop there and ask what gate the flight is leaving from. Finding the gate is usually a lot easier than trying to read the arrival and departure screens.
Yeah.
And they will often ask if I need assistance. And or they'll just say, check the monitor inside. And if you just say, I can't see the monitor, could you just tell me what gate it is? And then let them know that you have a pretty good idea where the gate is. No, you don't need assistance. Or at least in my case, I don't usually. That usually works out pretty well.
Yeah.
And it doesn't get anybody into my face of, oh, we have to do this, you have to do that kind of thing. But I think if I went up and appeared as though I have no idea what I'm doing, I would probably end up with more difficulties than I have fortunately had in the past.
So once again, it's a question of being clear and being polite, but being clear about what it is that you need and, if necessary, why you need it. But I've certainly seen instances where people have not known exactly what they needed and so assumptions are made and they're frequently incorrect. So if you just figure out what it is you need and tell them, you'll pretty much usually get it, even as a partially sighted traveler.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think many of us have learned through the years, particularly in urban areas, to make yourself appear as adept as possible. And when you do that, then when you only need one particular thing, you're not giving people the impression that you're really totally lost in space somewhere.
Even though you might be.
Even though you might be. Fake it.
That's right. That's right.
It's really important. It keeps your aggravation level down. It just makes for a much more pleasant traveling experience.
And anyone who, when I first started all my traveling for Pulse Data, I was terrified, and I traveled a lot before then, but I had, 75,000 to 80,000 dollars worth of Pulse Data equipment with me, and I kept thinking, oh my gosh, oh, what if this happens? Oh, what if that? And I remember on my first flight, it was like somebody hit me over the head, and I said, you know, you can worry about this till the cows come home, but you have no control over it, so
exactly.
You have to. You gotta just go forward like you do have control over it, because
exactly.
That's the way you just make it through.
Mm-hmm.
So
I learned that because I traveled between personal and ACB business. I think I traveled, I did something like 11 flights within 2 months after 9/11.
Yeah.
And you just had to do that. You had to be as cooperative as possible. But you really have to be at the top, at least appear to be at the top of your game the whole time. It really makes for a much more pleasant experience and for far fewer hassles.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Well, I will look forward to seeing you in Birmingham.
I will, too. One other quick tip that I think is very good, I know people have a tendency to put a lot of fluorescent tape and such on their bags when they are checking them. One other, just to get a little plug in here, one other thing that I have found time and time again very helpful, particularly for people with low vision and for totally blind people, is ACB luggage tags are very large and very discernible and will be available at the ACB store in the exhibit hall.
Yes, they will.
My plug.
and she's absolutely right, because I had one. I have to get some more, actually. Mine was destroyed by one of the airline gorillas. But it had traveled many, 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 many trips with me. But all I would do is describe that luggage tag, and they would see it. Why don't you describe the luggage tag real quickly?
The luggage tag looks like roughly about 3 by 5 inches. It has a white strap that attaches to your suitcase. It's in the shape of it looks like an American flag with an ACB, with a small ACB logo in the lower right corner of it. So if you say that you've got a luggage tag, looks like a flag, people pick up on it very quickly.
Yeah. It
also
works.
Is nice in that the back of it is clear plastic, so that you can put either, there's an identification card that comes in there, or it fits your business card in there very nicely. And that clear plastic, though it's a little difficult, it's a little strong to do it on, you can take that clear plastic piece out and braille on it, so that you can put your last name or whatever you want on there, so that you can have braille on it for your own quick identification, which might not be a bad idea someplace like coming into the Birmingham airport, where there may be a couple of other people on your flight who also have them. But generally, when you're flying, to something that's a non-ACB a non-ACB event, you're probably going to be one of a very few people on a flight that has a luggage tag that looks like an American flag with a little Braille ACB logo in the corner of it.
All right. Thank you. Thank you
very much. Very good. Have a wonderful time in Boston. I am envious.
I shall.
And say hello to everybody up there.
I shall do that.
I will see you in Birmingham.
See you next week.
Okay. Take care.
Bye-bye. And we're coming to the end of the program. We've got about another 8 minutes or thereabouts. The telephone number is 866-666-7926.
And Marlene, I need to make a quick comment here. We lost a few seconds. The server dropped me into the chat room for probably about 10 seconds of that. So we did get some.
And okay,
we have another phone call.
All right.
Let me bring the caller into the room here. And you have the caller.
Hello, caller. With whom are we speaking, and from where are you calling?
Hi, Marlena. It's Rachel in Orlando. How are you?
I'm fine, Rachel. How are you?
I'm good. I'm good. Sounds like you're having better weather in Boston than we are in Florida today. But, you know, typical summer thunder showers kind of thing. So.
Well, you keep them.
Oh, darn. Well, I got a couple tips that might be helpful. I was going to mention what Terry did about making your luggage visible. And it would be a great idea to have the ACB tags, except that everybody going to Birmingham will probably have them now. So still mark your luggage somehow and know what color your luggage is, because, you know, everybody and their brother is going to have black luggage with something on it. So I actually have a piece of black luggage that has some ribbons on it. So, and they're just real short ribbons, and they're tied to the handle, so I can tell anybody that might be looking for the luggage for me what to look for. And that's really helpful.
Yeah.
Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, no, I was just going to agree with you that that one of the first things I'm frequently asked is, do you have any kind of a ribbon tied to your suitcase?
Yeah, that's really helpful. And also, I found, I've traveled quite a bit, too. Actually, several weeks ago, I just went to the UK, and I will have to say, Dave, that the meet and assist people in Manchester were very good, actually. So I'll give them a special recognition. They were very helpful. And I actually met some passengers on the flight that were very helpful, just kind of orienting me to things on the flight if necessary. And that was one of the other things I was going to say, is if for some, you know, they have the videos on the flights that tell you where the nearest exits are. Some of the airlines actually do have that information in Braille, and other flight attendants will come and tell you where those are. But if they don't, feel free to ask the flight attendant before you take off where those places are, where the lavatories are, where the exits are, and they've all been more than happy to help me on that count as well.
Yeah, I find the flight attendants are extremely helpful. In fact, sometimes annoyingly so.
Yeah, they can't. Some of them are great, and then others are not so communicative, and so you got to find a happy medium there somewhere. But
Do you ever find that flight attendants kneel down when they talk to you, but they don't when they talk to sighted passengers?
Well, I always figure it's because of the dog. You know, that just gets them closer to the dog, you know.
I find that really, to me it's really irksome, because they kneel down to talk to me and kids.
Yeah. Actually, now that you mention it, yeah, I always thought, like I say, it was more because I had a dog there, and they're trying to get a closer look at her. And I know we're running close on time. I'll say one more quick thing. Again, with traveling with guide dogs, I always found it was really helpful, too, when I travel with my dog, is to take those little baby carrots with me, just in case for some reason there's a problem, you know, with, you know, how the pressure affects your ears, and I know that it could affect the dog's ears as well. And I know it's a great treat for them, it's healthy, and it might allow their ears to kind of pop a little bit when they're flying.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Ice is good, too.
But I know
my dog would eat carrots before she would eat ice on a plane, although we have somebody living with us now who's got a dog that taught her that ice is really cool, so she might change that now, but...
Yeah, and also traveling with a guide dog, I mean, certainly our schools give us their suggestions, and anyone who wants to know about traveling with their dog, always feel free to call your school. But I tend to give my dog a little bit less water, but I tend to feed her regular meal before the flight.
Right, I do.
But I move it back.
Yeah,
you know,
I think they need to have a little something.
Yeah.
I agree with that, totally.
Yeah. And taking your dog out at an airport, that's a whole other issue that we haven't even covered.
I have to go back through security.
That's right. And it's a real pain. But, again, you state what you need, And if you spurt it clearly and politely, you'll probably get it.
Absolutely. I totally agree with you on that one.
Well, thanks so much for the call, and I will see you in Birmingham.
Definitely. We'll be there. Looking forward
all right.
to it.
We're bad in a thousand. Everyone who's called in tonight is going to the big Birmingham Bash.
Well, you know, we could have a Marlena show get-together or something, couldn't we?
Well, that'd be fun. Let's do it.
All right.
All right. Take care, Rachel.
You have a great time in Boston, and we'll talk to you in Birmingham.
Thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. So it's just about time to wrap up here, and so we're gonna bring this week's program to a halt. But just kind of to review, if you want to come to Birmingham, try it. Just state clearly what it is you need, what you think you need to travel successfully. Listen carefully to what the airlines say to you in response, and above all, have a fabulous time. And I will see you in Birmingham. Want to say thank you to my wonderful Gary the Board Guy who made this happen tonight, and to Dave Williams in the UK. And stay tuned next week, and we will have our final show on the ACB convention in Birmingham. Thanks for listening. Have a great week.
You've been listening to Marlena on ACB Radio. We'll be back next week, same time, same place. But in the meantime, if you've got an idea for a future show, why not drop me an email? The email address is Marlena, that's M-A-R-L-A-I-N-A, at acbradio.org. Thanks to Dave Williams, director of ACB Radio, and most of all, thanks to you, the listener. See you next week.